Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things, including community-supported agriculture this week on KHOI Radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana.
And I am Donna.
And we are the Donalana Kitchen. We get together to talk about a lot of different things. We have to acknowledge the fact that we had one heck of a dandy rainstorm last night, and it's put everyone in a very nice mood.
Beautiful to wake up. My back porch faces east, so I always get the sun in the kitchen in the morning. So I get up, and I have my cold brewed coffee, and I go out and sit on the porch, and the air this morning was glorious, just about perfect.
Ah, summer in Iowa. Very good. First, we're going to talk about something that is really good, summer in Iowa thing. We've been talking about summer treat recipes, and today, Donna's got something really fine to share with us. Think summer.
Popsicles, homemade popsicles, and adult popsicles. So there's two kinds, the kind you make for your children or your grandchildren, which are any little thing, fruit, you know, frozen orange juice. You can use the kind of molds that you buy. You can use the Dixie cup with the stick in it. And I've been through various machinations to make the stick stand up. The actual trick is to sort of par freeze it, and then about halfway through you stick the stick in. But I've done other things like, cut index cards in the top and stick the stick in the middle of that to hold it up, or scotched all kinds of, engineering in the kitchen. Even using ice cube trays and sticking toothpicks in it. But, children love it.
There are also commercially available plasticky sort of shapes.
Lots of reusable
ones.
Push-ups, yes. And the kind, yes, that use sticks.
I grew up on the Tupperware version, so I have consumed many popsicles.
Oh, my mother, and this is really old, I don't think they even do it, but she used to have a brown rubber mold. I'm sure it would be made out of silicone now, but it was a big treat at the time. And of course you can make them nutritious by making them with yogurt and fresh fruit or just plain juice. And one thing I like about making homemade popsicles is that you don't cultivate this over-sweetened palate that most poor children have these days, A little bit of sweet is good. It's good. You don't have to add, 5 grams or 25 grams of sugar or whatever that you get in most of the frozen ones that you buy at the store. So, but the adult popsicles I want to encourage everyone to make usually have some sort of alcoholic base. Now, the good thing with popsicles is it's almost impossible to make a bad recipe, because unlike ice creams and sorbets, if you get the alcohol content too high, you have trouble freezing it because it still has to be stirring and freezing at the same time. With popsicles, you can pretty much almost take your favorite cocktail, put it in a mold, and stick a stick in it. And if you leave it in the freezer long enough, you're going to have an adult popsicle. Witness the number of times that perhaps you've put either beer or wine in the freezer and forgotten about it, and kabloom, you come back and you have a whole messy freezer. And
kabloom,
you,
kabloom.
Yeah, you've ruined your whatever you were trying to freeze. So I got carried away last night looking up different variations. My own personal favorite is made with Campari, so we'll call this a recipe, but I do want to encourage you to make your own. Campari is a sort of bitter aperitif with beautiful red color, and it's I consider it a digestive. So I mix it just with either lemon and water and Campari, or grapefruit and Campari, and then you just freeze it, and then you have an adult popsicle. But the recipes I was looking at, the ones, there were beer ones and wine ones and your favorite margarita one. Here are some. I'm just going to read you some suggestions so that you can get very creative yourself. There was the white sangria with peaches in it, cherry limeade popsicle, cherry wheat beer sickles. I even read, now I couldn't quite understand the logistics of this, but I saw a picture on the internet where they actually make a push-up with a beer can. Somehow you open the beer can, you pour a little bit out, you put in some flavoring, and of course you have to pour some out so that there's room for it to expand when it freezes. And then somehow you open both the top and the bottom of the can once it's frozen, and you have to stick a stick in it before it freezes so that you actually make a push-up. Now, I don't know how you don't cut yourself on the,
right.
on the
you
thing.
Probably, but you probably don't want to use the pop top for the stick or anything like that.
I don't
that sounds
really,
a little risque.
But it was a cute idea. I can't say I've done
a pretzel. You use a pretzel. I have a big fat pretzel for the stick. There we go. I was hoping.
I don't know. I have no personal experience with it, but I saw the picture and I thought that looks good. Here's another concept, the honeydew cucumber margarita popsicle. This was called the bittersweet chocolate bourbon popsicle. And the recipe was somehow there's no ice cream or milk in it. You just melt the chocolate and you make a chocolate syrupy kind of thing. And then you pour bourbon in it and freeze it. That sounds really wonderful. Then all of the usual, here's one that I thought was really good. This does not even require a mold. You take the, it's watermelon. And so you cut the watermelon in wedges. Oh, I see. I can't open this. I'll have to remember what it said. So you cut the watermelon in wedges and then you then you soak them in tequila and lime juice for 15 or 20 or minutes or half an hour or something. Then you stick the popsicle stick into the wedge and then you put it in the freezer. And there was this wonderful quote from Mark Twain with the recipe. It said, "When one has tasted watermelon, he knows what the angels eat." So can you imagine if you're adding tequila and lime to that? So another recipe that I loved was pudding pops. On the internet, I call them adult popsicles, but the common parlance seems to be not popsicles.
Cocktail. But
Poptails.
Poptails.
Poptails. Instead of cocktails, they're called a poptail. So this pudding pop, there were two flavors that were just mind-blowing. One was the White Russian poptail, which entails having vanilla pudding, vodka, Kahlua, and Bailey's Irish Cream. You got that? Vodka, Kahlua, and Bailey's Irish Cream with vanilla pudding. We may have to make a public display of ourselves with those. This sounds wonderful. But the Black Russian was chocolate pudding, vodka, and Kahlua. So now that sounds like a supreme dessert. So if you guys, anybody comes up with something really, really outstanding, be sure to give us a call or email us and give us your recipe and we'll talk about it online. There were things people were recommending, Bloody Mary popsicles for breakfast.
Oh, let's see. we can make it through this summer in style, I think. Donna will include something on the website. All these you can make up popsicles as you go, but you can find recipes for popsicles and some of our past show recipes on the website. Go to www.khoifm.org. Look for talk show. Look for Donna Lana Kitchen under that. And then you can find some of the stuff we've been talking about.
Yes, and make popsicles, but responsibly. And make sure the children don't get them. But you could take one of those like pudding recipes and you could make the adult version.
Yes.
And the child's version with just chocolate pudding.
And everyone will be happy. Sounds like a good thing to have for summer. We want to welcome to our studio today a special guest. We've asked Marilyn Anderson from the Farm to Folk CSA here in Ames to come and tell us everything she knows. Welcome, Marilyn.
Well, I want to first, by way of introduction, I want to say that Marilyn has done an amazing thing, and we have a Farm to Folk, I think, is a very unique way of organizing food buying in our community, and it has been going on a number of years. Marilyn, tell us a little of the history.
Okay, well, I have to go back to about 1996 when we
see that's a long time ago, guys. We are very ahead of the curve nationally.
Yeah, yeah. When CSA was kind of new, and we
that
started
is
magic.
Community supported agriculture.
And so we started out with one farmer growing for about 12 or 14 different families, and they would get a share of food, whatever was ready in the garden that week. And after
so you don't choose what you're getting. You choose your farmer.
You choose your farmer, and your farmer grows to the best of his or her ability what grows in our area, and then every week you get what's ready.
You prepay in advance for the season a flat rate.
That's correct.
And then you kind of take what comes, basically. Okay. You are investing. That's why it's called community-supported agriculture, because you are taking the risk with the farmer.
Exactly. You're sharing in the risk, supporting the farmer, so, you know.
So we still have farmers that grow actual food.
Exactly. That's what Farm to Folk really wants to see happening. Farmers growing food that we can all eat.
And a community-supported agriculture organization gives the impetus and the encouragement to let farmers be creative, which is really wonderful. They don't have to take all the risk up front by themselves, although farming is a risky proposition. You never know what the weather's going to do or what.
It's not all perfect like it was last night.
We don't always get those beautiful rains. But when you know that there is a buyer, a consumer, someone who's going to enjoy what you grow, ready to, and waiting for your product, it's a whole different experience than just growing a commodity or growing something on spec, so to speak.
Yeah, and hoping someone shows up and appreciates it.
Mm-hmm. That's what we try to do at Farm to Folk is, you know, the ready market for the farmer. And another aspect of it that I think is really important is the connection between the farmer and the consumer.
Relationship building.
Yes.
Know your farmer. That's what the USDA came up with last year, but we've been doing it a long time here.
We have been.
How many producers does Farm to Folk currently have?
Right now we have 20 producers, and we have a range of vegetables, fruits, meats, dairy, eggs, breads and flours.
Cookies.
Soap. We don't have soap right now. Every now and then we have soap. Our soap producer went back to school, so we're out of soap now. but honey, you know, pretty much everything you could need to eat, we can provide it at Farm to Folk.
Year round. That's the amazing
part. It's really amazing to have such it's a collaborative. It's a cooperative venture among all these growers. There are CSA models that just have one farm producing a lot of things for people. But one farm, I don't think, could quite match the variety that Farm to Folk gives the Central Iowa community here. It's a wonderful, wonderful collection of stuff. Did you mention fish? There's fish. There's greenhouses that grow things in the winter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fish is a little iffy. You have to go there just because of the rules about fish.
Oh,
you have to buy
right.
them alive, but it's available.
That's it. See, once again, an organization like this gives growers the chance to take a chance. Let's try this. And all new things are being done. People get to experiment with different things sometimes. But also, they get really good at growing what grows well on their farm. Growing now?
Right now, this week we had kale, snap peas, lettuce. Mm. Spinach, turnips, beets, broccoli, kohlrabi, cabbage, radishes. We're kind of in that transition period between the spring crops and the summer crops. So I think some of those things will be phasing out, and then we'll be going into like the green beans and carrots and
like
that.
And berries.
Berries right now. I would say this week is the week that Berry Patch in Nevada, they have opened for pick-your-own strawberries. So this week and next week are probably the weeks to get your strawberries.
And they are also one of the producers that deliver to Farm to Folk. Where can someone who's interested in joining this organization or getting food from this organization, they sign up, and where do they meat to get their stuff.
Explain the mechanics of
it. The mechanics. So how does this work?
Well, we have a website, farmtofolk.com, and it's spelled out FARMTOFOLK.com. And you can join online. And
the membership fee is?
$15 per year.
Uh-huh. Well worth it.
And you can sign up then for a CSA share, although that is kind of, it's past time for CSA shares now. We do have fall CSA shares still available, mm-hmm. but the summer ones are sold out. But then we have also what we call a la carte, where people can order weekly whatever they, whatever's on the list.
And in the quantity that they've.
Correct, yeah. Right. You can just go on and order a pound, 2 pounds, whatever you want. So it makes it, you have more choice than with the CSA
share. Every Thursday night or Friday, into your inbox pops up an email from Marilyn at Farm to Folk saying exactly what's available. Mm-hmm. And then you fill in what you want and you send it back to her. And then what happens, Marilyn?
Then, yeah, you send it back by midnight on Saturday. The following Tuesday, you come to the United Church of Christ in Ames.
Which is on...
It's 217 6th Street.
Right, right on the corner of 6th and Douglas. Yes. Or 6th, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you go in the back door.
Go in the back door, and we'll have your order all boxed up in a tub, ready for you to to take home.
There's a lot of good smiling faces at these locations. So a CSA is not just about food. It's about people, too.
And let's see. And so how do you pay?
You can pay. You can send a check. We don't take plastic yet. We haven't done that. But so you can pay when you come pick up. What we like to do for the a la carte is have people set up an account. So they put money into an account, and then every time they order it, the cost of that order is deducted from their
Marilyn's
account.
A very good bookkeeper.
Thank you.
Hi. She's yet to make ever a mistake with me. She's much better than I am at keeping track of this. So, Marilyn, you want to go a little bit more into the history of how we got this? Because it's a fairly unique organization. We're really lucky to have had it, and talk about how much it's grown and changed. And it's our very own Ames and surrounding area food distribution system.
Yeah, well, like I said, it started back in the 90s, and after the first couple years, there were like five different farmers who collaborated. They decided what a CSA share would consist of, and in the winter, they'd decide who would grow what, and then every week in the summer.
No, they during the winter, they decided who would grow what in the summer.
In the summer.
Right, because it evolved into actually growing in the winter, but go ahead.
Okay, yeah. And then every week they would then bring what was ready, and the members, which back at that time we had maybe 80 members, started like at 20 members, grew to 80.
And where are you now?
Now we're up close to 300.
Woohoo! Yeah. Foodies of the Central Iowa unite.
And how it evolved over time was as farmers got more experience growing, they felt like they wanted to have their own farm and they could grow a wider range of things, not just one or two things. Mm-hmm. And so they, you know, started their own CSA farm. And in 2006, we kind of switched from the magic beanstalk model of a collaborative CSA mm-hmm. to the farm to folk model, where three different farmers offered their own CSA, and so people could pick. They wanted, you know, we would put on our website what each share, what they aimed to bring.
Oh, could you name some of those farms?
Well, we started out, we had Small Potatoes Farm, and we had Iowa Fresh Produce, and what was the third one we had? Tabletop Now. And we right now we have Iowa Fresh Produce, Tabletop Farm, and the Homestead Farm. Those are the three CSA shares we have. And then when we switched to that, people could select, you know, I want this, this, or this. Or some people with big families would buy a share from each. And we added the a la carte at that time. Mm-hmm. And so it's an opportunity for smaller growers, people just starting out. They can specialize and offer a few things, and as they gain more experience, maybe we'll get some more CSA farmers.
Plus, it's not all vegetables. Talk about... Earl Hafner's farm.
Yeah, Earl Hafner's farm is amazing. He has, he grows.
It's called Early Morning Harvest.
Yes.
And it's in Panora.
Yes. And he has a big greenhouse with an aquaculture setup with fish growing.
That's where the fish, you can buy the fish.
The tilapia. And then the tubes and pipes go, and then he has this big hydroponic system with floating things with lettuce and chard and all sorts of things growing there. And
so you can buy the fish, you can buy the vegetables.
Yeah, and then he also has a mill, and he raises organic wheat, and so you can buy organic, certified organic wheat flour.
Freshly ground flours, corn flours, buckwheat flours, wheat flours, and there's different kinds of wheat also. Earl and his son have done an amazing job of building out a local milling facility, which is not an easy thing to do because not only do you have to grow the crop, you have to, like with wheat, you have to get the hull off of it. And then you have to grind it in certain ways. So they refitted a whole one of their barns and made, you know, had to, of course, you have to bring it up to spec with the health department. So it's quite unique that we have this freshly ground, locally grown flour here available.
Yeah, and it's nice, the specialty flours. I mean, you can buy flour that's for bread, flour that's for pastry.
Yeah, and he has some hot cereal mixes, too, that he sells. So, and I think you can also get this in some Hy-Vees, watch for the early morning harvest logo, and also at Wheatsfield.
Yeah.
And then, oh, and they also have the best, absolutely the best buckwheat honey. Which Earl swears by for his arthritis. Let me just tell you that.
It's amazing. It's like eating candy.
Oh, it is. It's so good. If you are a buckwheat honey fan, I must say his is really, and it has a very special flavor. It's not when you think of honey. If you have never tasted buckwheat honey, just get some from farm to folk just for that reason. It's very delicious.
It is delicious.
In fact, we could make buckwheat honey popsicles. That would be good.
There you go.
Yeah. Why not?
I think you could. That sounds like a very good idea.
Yeah. And then you have some cookies. And what other things do you have?
Yeah. We have.
What's that called? The Spanish name? Alfajores?
Alfajores.
Alfajores.
I don't know if I said it exactly right. But, yeah, there's a woman who.
She's Chilean. Is that right?
I think originally.
Yeah. And so it's something from her culture.
Mm-hmm. And they're like a shortbread cookie with a caramel. A dulce, they call it.
Oh, yeah.
In the they're to die for.
They're wicked. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
She has chocolate ones and then the vanilla ones, I guess.
And she does make little gift packages, too, if you want to.
Mm-hmm. A very special gift. They're just in a beautiful little box with a kind of a rustic look. But
yeah, and there's,
gorgeous.
What, I don't know, six
like
or eight or something
in
it. It's a lovely little hostess present if you're going somewhere for, you know, for that sort of thing. The other thing that I find remarkable about Farm to Folk is, okay, when I first moved back to Iowa, I don't know, it's got to be at least 8 years ago, you know, it was in the summer and we were having all these wonderful foods. Then all of a sudden, bang, September 1st comes along, it's Labor Day. All of a sudden, there's no more local food. And I'm going, what? You know, we have two more months of warm weather. What's going on here? So I think in the 8 years that I've been here, I've seen people first extend into fall crops, which are wonderful. You can grow kales and chards and things like that and cabbages for quite a long time, you know, maybe almost through till Christmas. You can even save your squashes and your winter squashes, that is, and, of course,
potatoes,
sweet potatoes.
And garlic.
Onions and garlic and carrots. And then that developed, and then a few years later, we started having hoop houses, which means we can have fresh salad greens, not shipped from California, all through the winter. So farm to folk, unlike the farmers markets, goes all year round. And in the winter, we can often have, well, kales, always.
Kale, chard, lettuce, spinach, and the crops, those crops in the winter are especially good. The cold weather makes them extra sweet. They're just fantastic.
Well, and also if there's something brilliant to have a live local product in your mouth that time of year. You know, it's like winter is not quite so glum. You know, you're not kind of having to eat that. Not that we don't appreciate California produce, but how much better is it to have something, you know.
The vegetable less traveled. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So,
Marilyn, can you talk about the speaking of winter things, green shares from Lee's Greens.
Lee's Greens, yeah. Last year they had built 4 greenhouses, and they are heated greenhouses, and they did, for the first time, a greens share where you sign up, you pay, like a CSA share, you pay at the beginning of the season. That season begins in October, and then you get 30 weeks of a delivery each week of various greens, and just they kind of rotate it. So 1 week you'll get chard, and the next week you'll get lettuce, and then spinach and kale.
And he also sells a la carte all winter long, so you can order any of the above that he's producing. And there's who else grows all winter long? Sometimes doesn't Earl bring some greens in too? Sometimes?
He does, yeah, because he has that big greenhouse with
aquaculture. Oh, right, with aquaponics. Mm-hmm. So we can get from – now there's also eggs, chickens –
yes.
Duck eggs, one of my favorites. Sometimes we can have duck eggs.
Yeah, almost every week we have duck eggs and all kinds of chicken eggs from several different producers.
Yep, lots of local chicken eggs.
And
several people producing local chickens, too.
Yes, mostly grass-fed, pastured chickens are available. We have several meat producers, too, and we started working with the Story City Locker. And
they were on the radio show a couple of weeks ago, talked about their share.
So their share is available at Farm to Folk, and they sell a la carte at Farm to Folk also.
Yeah, and there's also like Cindy Madsen, Vic and Cindy Madsen show up once a month. You can order pork, beef, chicken, cherries when she has them.
Yeah, aronia berries.
Aronia berries. And then, of course, there are lots of people making jams and jellies like Lana and Cindy and Beth at Jumping Bean Farm makes jellies. Mm-hmm. What other – I should make a pitch for duck eggs. I have to say, if you've never eaten a duck egg, they are bigger than a chicken egg, and they are richer.
Much richer.
But there's – so to make an omelet out of a chicken egg, a duck egg is just – it's sublime. They taste sort of the same, so – but you just, it would be like the most special egg you've ever had. And the shells are, they're thicker than chicken eggs. So you're trying to crack it and it doesn't, you know, you got to really give it a good whack. It's a good adventure. So, and not every place in the world has the availability of duck eggs.
That's true. And they are amazing for baking. Bakers love duck eggs.
Oh, yeah. But to me, it seems like such a waste though because they're so amazing. I just love duck eggs.
Wonderful. You can get amazing food right here in central Iowa from Farm to Folk. And it's a two-way street. The farmers get a lot out of this organization, and the consumers, the eaters of these food, get a lot out of this organization. It's more than just the food. There are relationships struck. You get to meet who your farmer is. And also, if you're a little new to the cook your food, buy your food, what do I do with this box of CSA stuff? There's people that talk food, and there's
The blog.
There's all sorts of helpful information.
Marilyn, tell us about the new blog.
Yeah, the new blog. One of our members, Elena Christian, has started a blog, and she knows what is available each week at Farm to Folk. She looks for recipes that use those products to help you figure out when you get something weird in your CSA share that you've never heard of before.
And what would be weird?
Oh, I don't know. None of it's weird to me, but maybe you don't know what to do with kohlrabi. So she'll find a recipe that you can use for kohlrabi.
And that blog is attached to the Farm to Folk website?
Yeah, there's a link to it on our Farm to Folk website. It's called Seasoned Locally.
Okay. And also once a year, Marilyn has the farmers' dinners where everybody comes. It's a potluck.
It's one of the most amazing potlucks. You know, foodies and farmers all getting together with local food. How can you go wrong with a potluck like that?
Yeah. And they give the Golden Fork Award to the CSA member who has purchased the most food that year.
Mm-hmm.
I was a recipient 1 year.
You get to see who eats a lot and enjoys. The sharing, the community that is built through community-supported agriculture. is a lot different than going to your local supermarket. You don't usually sit down at the table with the people that you see in the aisle there, but you get to meet other consumers or other eaters that come the same time you do to pick up your boxes. You get to meet the farmers, and it's a really nice bunch of folk.
It is. We have some opportunities during the year, too, to visit farms. We have the farm crews in the spring and fall, and several different of the producers that are involved at Farm to Folk open their farms to just come out and visit and see what what it looks like and just learn about their challenges and
take kids.
Yeah,
you don't want your children to grow up not knowing that a strawberry grows in the ground or the chicken lays an egg. Or,
exactly.
Right?
Yes.
So, Marilyn, thank you for all the community service that you put into Farm to Folk. We really, really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me come on.
Yes. And give your contact information again for people that are interested in learning more about you.
You can sign up at our website. It's www.farmtofolk.com. And Farm to Folk is spelled out FarmToFolk.com.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Okay.
Good. You've been listening to KHOI. 89.1. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Welcome back to the Donna Lana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal, and I'm here with
Donna Prisgintas
and our special guest, Marilyn Anderson. She's going to stay around and help us a little bit here. You can listen to this program not only at noon on Tuesdays, but it repeats 7 o'clock Tuesday evening. So those of you who can't get enough of us, listen to us twice. There you go. Next on our list of great things to talk about is goats. That kind. So, Donna, give us a little update here.
Well, the current issue of the Iowa Outdoors, which is the DNR's magazine of conservation and recreation, has an article called Raising Goats. That's R-A-I-S-I-N-G And then R-A-Z-I-N-G.
As in knocking things down.
Exactly, which goats are very, very good at. I used to have goats. I love goats. Marilyn currently has goats. But this article was about actually, I don't remember the name of the people. We'll have to find it in the article. But they have a herd of goats that they loan out, or they have grazing methods. So you can buy their services, so they will come in and knock out all the underbrush. And currently, they are apparently out at McFarland Park, northeast of town, clearing out the underbrush. It says, the article starts off, the plants we love to hate, honeysuckle, autumn olive, multiflora rose, poison ivy, buckthorn. In the woods, these grab you and trip you and snag your clothes, scratch your hands, and farmers hate them too. They call them trash trees, honey, locust, willow, mulberry, shrubs, and vines. This is what the goats eat. And apparently, they eat very selectively, and they eat the stuff that none of us want. And they clear out the understory so that the non-trash trees can then form those, like, large oak savannas that we all appreciate. And Lana was complaining about the honeysuckle that's taking over out at her farm. And
goats love anything that's brushy. They don't particularly care for grass. And we've learned that goats—
They do like rose bushes, though. I hate to tell you.
Well, it's a bush. It's a bush. They sort of take over the prairie fires that used to manage this part of the country. Prairie fires keep the underbrush at bay for the prairie to come back. And prairie fires are a wonderful thing to do. And I have a small prairie at my farm, and we burn it occasionally. But fire can be a little nasty for neighbors and other things that catch on fire. So we've learned that goats can do things very selectively.
And they're sort of managed with electric fences, so they clear, you know, certain areas that you want. So it's a very controlled kind of thing, because if you don't control the goats, they will eat things you don't want them to eat. But
if they get out, they eat your best tree first.
Yes, they do, and they go right for those rose bushes every time. So
the organization that is currently working with the Story County conservation people at both McFarland Park and at the Robeson Wildlife Acres, also in the area, is called Goats on the Go.
And it's there it is.
Goats on the Go, yes. And these are people. Goats have minds of their own, so don't just think you can get a goat and point them in the right direction. You need people that know how to wrangle these little critters, because they're wonderfully personable. And not only are they good for eating things up that you don't want, you can milk them, you can shear them, you can eat them. What do you do with the goats on your farm, Marilyn?
I have Angora goats, and I'm a spinner and weaver, so I shear mine and use the fiber to make yarn and then weave it into things.
And they're wonderful. Good fun, aren't they?
Oh, they're great fun.
Yeah.
They're very personable, like you said. They're pets.
Okay, your goat story? You had
when
goats, too.
When I lived in California, I had goats. I had a mother and a baby who became less and less and less of a baby, but I was I kept them going because I was milking the mother. And, sometimes when I couldn't milk her enough, I would just let the baby, you know, continue nursing. Plus, I have to say, I did not have the heart to separate them, because when you separate them for several days, the baby cries mercilessly, and I just couldn't deal with it. So I just kept them together. They are, after all, herd animals, you know, so separating them is not in their best interest emotionally, of course. So what I did so that the baby didn't drink all of the milk was I made a brassiere for the mother.
I love it.
So, and it took me a while to get it right, because the baby, of course, was very, very clever and kept, you know, I mean, I had to make harnesses and the straps had to go, because the baby could often get the brassiere off of the mother. But
This sounds rather kinky, Donna, but okay.
No. It was made out of corduroy and had some straps and buckles on it. And, I had to work at it for a while, but finally, I was a bit smarter than my goats, not much, but so then I was living in a part of California that was prone to wildfires, and we had a major wildfire where I lived. So you would, like, have to pack up and get out really fast. So I managed to grab the cats and the dogs and the kids, children, that is, but I couldn't do anything with the goats. Fortunately, the ASPCA came around through the canyon in my neighborhood and rounded up all the livestock, including chickens and goats. So once the fire was over and everything was fine and you want to come back home, you don't know where your goats are, right? You know? And, of course, it was done in such a hurry that, you know, there was the number to call and how do you identify your goats and something. But my parents, who were living in the Midwest at the time, saw a thing on television about the fires, and they were showing the animals. And they saw my goats and could tell it was mine because one of them was wearing a brassiere. So I had the only goat with a bra on, so I was able to find my goat that way.
Aren't they wonderful animals?
Oh, they are. They're just adorable. And they kind of dance and skip and climb trees, and they're just joyful.
Oh, fantastic. Let's bring up another fiddle tune here by Al Murphy, Iowa Fiddler. It's called Salty Creek. Welcome back to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've been talking about CSAs and popsicles and goats, and we've got all kinds of things going on today.
I forgot to mention the other thing that goats do is their ultimate their ultimate demise would be that you can eat them. Goats milk and meat, but the meat is very low in fat. It's become quite prized lately, and you can get, I think you can buy it at the Story City Locker. They do have a supply of goats that they're, quote, harvesting. So give it a try sometime. It's very healthy and very delicious.
Good. And now we have another thing to talk about. We have our herb of the week. Herb of the week this week is an interesting plant that may be growing wild in your garden, or not exactly wild, but if you plant it, it sells seeds like crazy. I call it perilla, and Donna calls it
shiso.
And I can't say shiso very fast. She seashells.
It's S-H-I-S-O. Shiso.
See.
And that's the Japanese or Asian name for it.
Yes, this was originally an Asian plant, but it's taken over the rest of the world. It's well prized in Japan. And tell us a little bit about what you think it tastes like.
Oh, this is such a tricky thing. It's not... the closest thing I can say is try to imagine mint without the mint flavor. It's aromatic. It's not herby like basil or anything like that. And it's just, it also comes in varieties. So the green, I think, is the most strongly clear flavored one. The purple one is quite beautiful. It has a dark, purpley, ruffled leaf.
It sort of looks like a basil leaf. Well, mint and...
Bigger.
Yeah. It is in the mint family, like basil is in the mm-hmm. mint family. So it's shaped like that. Or like the woman that was my neighbor when I was growing up in Wisconsin, my mom's neighbor, she was an avid gardener. And I know she had bunches of this stuff, but she didn't realize it was edible. Who in the...
Oh, because the red one is very beautiful.
Right, right. She just grew it for the pretty. And after all, in Wisconsin in the 60s, who the heck is going to eat something called perilla? But she grew it anyway, and it self-seeded all the time. And she...
That's spelled...
She called
P-E-R-I-L-L-A, it... P-E-R-I-L-L-A, perilla.
Perilla. She called it... Oh, that perennial coleus-looking thing is what she called it. It has a wonderful aftertaste. So I think
it's a digestive. Yeah. I know it in sushi restaurants, it's served at the end of the meal. I made last week. I had a piece of tuna that I just cut it raw, and I dipped it in a mixture of tamari and lemon, and then wrapped some nori seaweed around it and chopped the with a leaf from the shiso. Oh. It was sublime and easy and healthy and delicious and right here in the middle of Iowa. Very
right.
Japanese.
And like I said, it does self-seed and it's quite pretty. I ran across this plant, or I identified it from an herb book and actually from a recipe book that leaned more toward Italian recipes. Mm-hmm. And so I've ended up chopping up this nice little purple leaf, which I have, and putting it in rice dishes. It has this really nice... Oh, and raw salads, too.
Right, you just cut it up like chiffonaded a little bit, which is, you know, where you roll the leaf and then you just chop it so you get kind of these long, thin strands. It's beautiful just dropped into warm rice with a little olive oil on it and salt and pepper.
Yeah. And the seed is available from a lot of seed catalogs. It's usually available in both green and purple. I haven't had any luck with the green perilla, green,
she sells seashell by the seashore. Something like that.
I've got it now. My green stuff doesn't come back. The purple is great, and it always shows up exactly where I want it and also where I don't.
So well, I bought my plants at one of the farmers at the North Grand Farmers Market, although I'm afraid I bought everything she had. She may plant them again, so there'll be a little more. Or sometimes at the Asian stores you can buy, they sell a package of a few flattened, carefully arranged leaves, and you can buy them just if you want to taste them. And don't ask for perilla, ask for shiso.
That's it.
And I, if you've never tasted it, try to find some and taste it. It's very unique.
Yes. Also, it's I have a little note here that it's grown in Japan for other uses besides just eating. It's the seeds contain 40% fatty, quick drying oil, and
wow.
Uses a substitute for linseed oil. So heaven knows they must grow a lot of it. Also, the essential oil of the leaves contains up to 55%. Oh, some great big long chemical name. But this chemical is easily converted to perillotine, which is 200 times sweeter than sugar and used commercially in Japan to sweeten tobacco.
That's hard to imagine because the leaves are not sweet.
But it's got this funny little fun aftertaste. So give this plant a try. Give this plant a try.
Shiso or perilla.
That's it. Well, now I want to mention some stuff coming up. You're listening to KHOI, the Donna Lana Kitchen. Coming up this Thursday, that's June 19th, from 5 to 8, there's a music walk in downtown Ames. And at the KHOI studio here on Douglas, some stuff is going on. Appearing at the KHOI studios will be Alice Thompson with a lap dulcimer and auto harp. Paul Hertz with keyboards and lots of other stuff. He does lots of interesting things. And a surprise guest hip-hop artist with KHOI DJ Ron Latson.
All right.
Lots of stuff. Come down for a listen.
Rock out downtown.
Right. And also, Coming up in August is going to be the Grassroots Radio Conference that KHOI is hosting, and it'll be a fine gathering of people.
Yeah, we're having radio heads, as they call themselves, from all over the country, come to our community.
Creative, community-based, interesting folk from August 14th to 17th. And we're looking for volunteers for help with the conference, for transportation, for giving beds, a room to stay for these people, to help with the food, and to help welcome these folks to our community. And if you would like
there
to get involved.
There are 150 people showing up. So.
You'll meet some good people.
Yeah.
If you're interested in helping, call at the station here, 515-292-2878.
Oh, I also want to mention once again that there is the Historical District is having the house tour on Sunday of some of the oldest neighborhood in Ames. People open up their houses, and I think two churches are also on the list. If you ever walk past these really interesting buildings and you wanted to see what's inside, Sunday afternoon will be your opportunity. It happens once a year, and it's different houses every year. It's my neighborhood. You'll probably see me.
Oh, good. It's always nice to poke into some interesting places. Let's see. Another thing that's coming up.
Saturday is the summer solstice.
Saturday is the summer
solstice.
The
longest day of the year. Guys, it's all downhill after that, you know. Now the days will start getting shorter. Oh, my goodness, it goes so fast.
And it's a really important time for farmers and for almost anybody else that is trying to live on this planet.
Yes, to be in tune with the seasons.
The Midsummer Festival, heaven knows we've been noticing that the sun is with us longer on that day, June 21st.
This is ancient.
It's the summer solstice has been called Litha. It's been called Albenheffen if you're a druid. And it's also the Islamic New Year. At Stonehenge, I don't know where Stonehenge is. At Stonehenge, they have a stone there that marks a midsummer sunrise. It's seen from the center of the circle. And we acknowledge the rising of the midsummer sun. And this is also the day of Heras. Heras are the goddesses of the women's mysteries. June is the month of women, actually. Juno, the great Roman mother god Juno. And she was known as the Queen of Heaven. That's why everyone thinks June is a great time for weddings. It's most favorable to the female. And also, Juno is the guardian of money and wealth and banking. So things should increase.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It's also
good time to go gambling, I guess, huh?
Oh, I suppose you could, or get married, one or the other, or both.
That's gambling.
Or both. It's also the time of the strawberry moon or the hot moon.
Woo-hoo.
I'd like to know which moon is it. There was a beautiful full moon this past week.
Wasn't it gorgeous?
The month of June is the door of the year, the gateway to the inner realms. It is the month of strengthening and consolidation of your gains. And it's also the door of the year if you are watching the sun.
And I know there are certain celebratory things, like since it's the sun, it's a time to build a fire. I believe I've done some solstices where you have to jump over fire. So don't make the fire very large. That's supposed to bring good luck for the year.
Yeah, fires are good. It's honoring the sun. It's honoring the hot thing in the sky. So get out there and celebrate the solstice.
Happy summer solstice.
Yes.
Midsummer Night's Eve. That will be Saturday night.
Right.
And do something celebratory, even if it's to make your adult popsicles.
Oh, that's not. Eat them around the fire.
Yeah.
With a goat.
Or candles.
With a goat. Yes.
Yes.
That's good.
Good idea. There we go. Covered all of our bases.
Go. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen with Lana Noctigal,
Donna Prisgintas,
and thanks to special guest Marilyn Anderson, who told us about the Farm to Folk CSA. Thanks to Rick Morrison for his excellent engineering. You've heard fiddle music by Al Murphy during the show. And we'll go out with another tune. This is by a jazz fusion quintet called The Project. I heard them in Ames a couple years ago. Really creative people. And this tune is called Winter in June. So join us again next week, Tuesday at noon, and it's the same show is repeated 7 o'clock in the evening.
Yeah, and I think we're doing strawberry shortcake next week.
Oh, it's a season. Strawberry shortcake would be lovely. So look for the Donna Lana Kitchen next week. Eat good food, enjoy life.